There are certain times when you look at a message, when you look at something and you say, wow, God ordained this. Now, God ordains everything, doesn't he? I mean, nothing sneaks up on God. So it's not like God planned this Sunday any more than another one. But it just seems to me like it's more evident. And here's why. Because we had a schedule all worked out, and this message wasn't supposed to be preached today. It was supposed to be preached on another day. But the way the scheduling worked out, this came up, and I opened it up, and I looked at it, and I thought, Communion Sunday, wilderness living. I thought, this is a message for today, September the 3rd, 2017. So I'm excited to be back in Joshua today, Joshua chapter 5. And we're going to read just a little brief portion. And we're going to start studying at chapter 2 of Joshua chapter 5, but we're going to start reading at verse 9. So it's just a brief portion that kind of encapsulates what we're talking about. The setting is the children of Israel are on the other side of the Jordan now. There's a tremendous task out in front of them. And God says, but you're not quite ready. Okay? We start with verse 9. Then the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So that place has been called Gilgal, or the place of rolling, to this day. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped on the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites. But that year they ate of the produce of the land. This is God's word. Wilderness living. You're just surviving. You're just wandering about. You really don't know who you are. You really don't know why you're here, and you really don't know where you're going. You're just surviving. Every day you go out and you pick up your food. But only enough for that day, because if you pick up more than that, it's going to go rotten. And if you don't pick up enough, it's going to go away. You're just surviving. The manna shows up, you go get it. The quail show up, you go get them, and you cook them. And quite frankly, you're sick of it. But it's another day. Another tick off of the calendar, and that's all it is. You're living in the wilderness. Life wasn't always supposed to be this way, but that's the way it is. And that's the way it's gotten. But something has happened. Because God has moved, and it seems like it's almost in a preliminary fashion, but God has moved and said, you know what, it's time to leave the wilderness and go into the land of promise. And as you start moving that direction, little things just keep happening that says you're getting closer to something. You're getting closer to something. But you've still got that wilderness mentality. You're still just surviving. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of you, the food doesn't taste particularly good. The thrill of the day isn't very thrilling. You don't feel like you're going anywhere. And the circumstances may have even changed. Things may have even gotten better. But you're hunkered down in the past. And it just doesn't seem like you can escape it. Life is a cross between discouraging, boring, disheartening. There's got to be an answer. There's got to be something. It was Miles Monroe, a Caribbean evangelist, that said, "I think that a great gift from God that God gave man is not the gift of sight, but the gift of vision. Sight is a function of the eyes, but vision is a function of the heart." Vision gives you the ability to look beyond the circumstances that are surrounding you and see beyond it. It's the ability to live outside of the wilderness, even when circumstantially you're in the wilderness. It's the ability to leave the wilderness, even though circumstantially you're not living in the wilderness. You see what I'm saying? That wilderness is as much a state of mind as it is a state of circumstance. And God wants to move the Israelites from sight to vision. The parents of the Israelites had left Egypt. I mean, just think of what it must have been to live in the days of Egypt, where you have the 10 plagues going on. And you see God's mighty hand moving every day. You witness the Passover. It's absolutely incredible. You move out into the desert and you see the desert all around you. You see the hopelessness of the situation, and God rolls back the water and you pass through the Red Sea on dry land. You hear the voice of God out of the clouds and everything seems so hopeful. But even though you see God's power, you focus in only on the wilderness. Because you've got a wilderness mentality. You start seeing life through the eyes of fear and survival instead of seeing the future through the eyes of God. That's wilderness mentality. It happened because of disobedience. Kadesh Barnea. An infamous place for a while in the eyes of the Israelites, because God, in rather rapid fashion, takes them from the gates of Egypt, setting them free from slavery, taking them through the wilderness and marching to the very gates of Canaan. And at the gates of Canaan, there they are. They stand there poised, ready to go into the land. And as they are poised and ready to go into the land, the 12 spies go in and they survey the land and they see exactly what God has promised, a land flowing with milk and honey. But they see the downside and they see the giants and they say, "Oh no, we can't take those." And because of their disobedience, because they moved by fear and not by faith, God says, "You're going to wander for 40 years. It's a God-imposed wilderness. It's a wilderness where God says, if you try to enter the land after this judgment has been pronounced, you're going to fail. And so for 40 years, they wander. For 40 years, they go from place to place to place. When do you move? Well, there's a certain amount of faith involved, because you move when God tells you to move, so that's good. Whenever the cloud or the pillar moves, that's when you move. But you really have no sense of direction. You're just kind of like a dog on a leash. There's no joy. There's no excitement. There's no putting down roots. There's no planting crops for the future. There's nothing. And in that 40 years, an entire generation passes from the scene. Every adult over 20 years old, men of fighting age, which was the age of 20, everyone over 20 years old is going to die in the wilderness. And a new generation will come up, raised by those faithless parents. And we see this loss in purpose in almost, in such a striking way, it almost boggles our mind. Because as we read at the top of the passage, at the time God said to Israel, said to Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again." That means to start circumcising them again. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibeath Haraloth. And this is why he did it. All those who came out of Egypt, all of the men of military age, died in the wilderness on the way to leaving Egypt. And here's the key, verse 5. All the people that came out had been circumcised. All the people that came out after leaving Egypt, they had been circumcised. It was a faithful people. When they were circumcised, they said, "We are the people of God." This was the single most identifying characteristic that said, "We are the people of God." If God and circumcision was key. It was so important. But then somewhere along the way, there was this almost intentional decision that says the ones born in the wilderness will not be. This is a staggering statement. This is a stepping away from God. There must be intention in it because there was so much emphasis placed on the fact that if these people are going to leave Egypt, if these people are going to be my people, they're going to follow me in circumcision. In the wilderness, they come to the gates of Canaan, and they step back, and it's almost as though they say, "Nope, not for our kids." And their faithlessness is almost palpable. It has to be intentional. And this is characteristic of wilderness living. I mean, stop and think about it. God is still working miracles. Every morning the manna is there, the quail is there. You look at how God miraculously provides water, how God miraculously saves them. It's not that God has stopped acting, it's that they've stopped watching. And they've just moved into survival mode. That's all they are. There's no thriving, there's no excitement. They're just living in the wilderness. They're, in fact, waiting to die so that God can work with somebody else. And God says, "You're not going to enter the abundance of my promises like this. It's not going to happen." They had come through a number of circumstances that had to be overcome. They had wandered in the wilderness and God said, "Okay, it's time." So they come to the gates of Canaan. And God says to Joshua on the far side of the Jordan, he said, "Moses is dead." The people have lost their leader. The people have lost the one person that they've known. All of the kids that have grown up under Moses. Nobody's known anyone else. They didn't know Egypt. They didn't know anything. All they knew is Moses is their leader. What's the answer to that? God says to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous," and by extension to the people, "Be strong and very courageous." God gives them words of exhortation. God gives them words of encouragement. God says to them, "I will be like with Joshua, just like I was with Moses." And while they never got that excited about God's power, they did see it. They could appreciate it. It just wasn't that big a deal to them. Words of encouragement that they had to overcome the death of a beloved leader. The morale of the troops, chapter 2. How does God solve that problem, the low morale of the people? 40 years earlier, God had sent 12 spies into the land, 10 of whom come back with an unfavorable report, 10 of whom they listen to and they pay attention to, 2 of whom are the only 2 that will go into the promised land after that 40 years, Joshua and Caleb. 40 years later, spies go back into the land of Canaan. It's the very same land that they had seen 40 years earlier. If anything, during that 40-year period, the people of Canaan have had time to fortify their cities. They've had time to build up their defenses. They've known that someday the Israelites are coming. So if anything, the situation is worse. In that first occasion when the Israelites saw the land, they saw land flowing with milk and honey. They came back with huge, huge clusters of grapes. And they said, it is true, the land is flowing with milk and honey, but there are giants in the land. And we can't possibly win against them. They said, they were giants in our sight and in their sight. I don't know how they figured out what the giants were thinking, but they said, in their sight, we were like grasshoppers. Certainly, nobody went up to the giants and said, well, how do I look to you? Well, I think you look like a grasshopper. Okay. It doesn't work that way. They were imprinting their own fears on the giants and believing somehow or another they couldn't possibly win. They operated on their fears instead of on their faith. 40 years later, they come and God works a mighty hand with his mighty hand through the deliverance of Rahab. And their morale is lifted and they said, God is on our side. We can do this. They overcome the problem of low morale. Chapters 3 and 4, they come to the Jordan in flood stage and they look at it and they said, how can we possibly cross the Jordan? There's an impassable river here. We can't possibly do this. And God says, all right. He tells them how to do it. He says, take the ark in front of you, set your feet in the river. We saw this last week. And the rivers part and they go through as on dry land. Problem solved. How? By God's mighty hand. God is demonstrating his power in the same kind of miracle that he used when they left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea. Now they cross the Jordan and you have this identification of power with the Jordan River that you did with the Red Sea. God is moving and God is acting. So now they're on the correct side of the Jordan. They're ready to move. They're ready to go. And God says, not yet. You're not quite ready. Well, what do we need? We got faith. We've got high morale. We've got everything we need. And God says, you're not ready yet. Take flint knives and circumcise all of the males of Israel. Why? Because they had not fully identified as the people of God. They needed to recognize that God was their champion and they were his people. It's kind of a restatement. We're all in. We're back. We're your people. We don't belong to anyone else. And God needed that kind of commitment from them, not for himself, but for them. They needed to recognize that you don't go in half-hearted. You don't go in with one foot in the wilderness and one foot in the promised land, because that's the problem that they had. Their mentality was still back in the wilderness. As long as they were in that uncircumcised state, they were back in the wilderness. Not that there's anything magical or mystical about circumcision. It just needed to say, we are God's people. And there needed to be that unequivocal statement, a new vision. They needed to shift their vision to God rather than back to the wilderness. Because they're still dealing back there. They're still living back there. A lot of you realize the fact that we say sometimes we have the idea that you can take people out of the wilderness, but you can't take wilderness out of the people. That somehow or another we are all victims of our past. And there's no escaping. In this moment, God says, you know what, that's not true. Because I want you to think about the parents who died in the wilderness. It's probably not a good idea to address this to specific people you know. But those people were bad parents. Spiritually speaking, they did not train up their children in the ways of the Lord. And that was marked by circumcision. Because circumcision wasn't their choice, it was their parents' choice. It was their parents that said, we choose to step away from God. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about when we talk about bad parenting, because honestly, you look back at your growing up years, and it's not that you're a whiner. It's not that somehow or another you're building scenarios that aren't there. You look back at your growing up years, and you know what? They weren't all that great. Some of you had situations you look back at, and you say, I don't know how I'm even here today. I don't know how I got here. I don't know how I survived. And we all hear the stories how you can't escape your past, and God says, yes, you can. It's always with you, but you don't have to be a victim to it. And that's the message today. You don't have to be a victim to your circumstances. You can be a victor over them. God says, identify yourself with me. And as they step forward and say, our parents made decisions for us when we were young, but we make our own decisions now, and we choose God. Isn't that a great statement? Isn't that a marvelous thing? Our parents looked at the giants and faltered. We choose to look at the giants and win. That was their mentality of stepping out of their past and recognizing the reality, but not being enslaved by it. Because as long as they would be enslaved by that, they would be back in that wilderness mentality. They could have all of the land of promise all around them, but they would still be enslaved to the wilderness. Because the wilderness is not a point of circumstance, it's a point of vision. What you're focused on. And so what? They did it. They did it. This is a serious issue. They did it and they celebrated it. In fact, they celebrated it in a strange way to our ears. Because what we would think is kind of a private, quiet thing, to them was a point of celebration, to the point that they called the place Gilbreath Haraloth. And you say, well, that's a nice name. It means the hill of foreskins. That's how they celebrated. We name this place after that point of circumcision that God has called us to do. And God says, you're almost ready. You're almost ready. Because this statement, all the people that came out had been circumcised, but the people born in the wilderness during the journey of Egypt had not. Isn't it fascinating that the people who had seen God's power rejected that? The people who had grown up in the wilderness with their parents' aimless wandering are the people that embraced God. It's a marvelous story of redemption, isn't it? It's a marvelous story that God can move in the hearts, regardless of your past. God can move in your heart in a marvelous and incredible way and bring you into his own treasured possession. You need to hear that today. If you've got issues with your past or your present that you think are going to destroy you, they won't. If you have your vision fixed on God. And something incredible happens at this point. It doesn't even say that God commanded it. And there's something that's really nice about that. It seemed to spring from the hearts of the people. Because it goes on to say, on the evening, I do have to come back up to verse 9. The Lord said to Joshua, I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the place has been called the place of rolling or Gilgal. The reproach of Egypt, what could that possibly be? Well, it's something like this. If you know the story of the Exodus, you know that Egypt was completely defeated. 10 plagues demonstrating the power of God. Leaving Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, having the Red Sea rolled back, and the armies of Pharaoh drowned in the Red Sea as they pursued the Israelites. A marvelous victory for God. You would think that Egypt would go back with their tail between their legs, but here's the situation. The children of Israel go out with great hope and great vigor. We are the people of Yahweh. They go out, and all of a sudden, they get into this aimless, useless wandering. This judgment of God upon them. Now, what is the conclusion of the Egyptians? There are one of two conclusions. Either your God is no God at all or too weak to do anything, or your God is a faithless God that's turned his back on you. Either way, it's a reproach. Those Israelites thought they were so tough. They thought they were so great. And they're just a mob wandering around the desert. They can't even feed themselves. They can't even provide their own water. They are useless people. The reproach of the Egyptians. Now notice, when they are circumcised and they identify with the people of God, God says, the reproach of Egypt is rolled away. And it's like this big, heavy burden they were carrying. And it just rolls down the hill away from them. And all of a sudden, they're free because they have identified with God. They have identified with God. You're free. And notice, it wasn't the annunciation of a new leader. It wasn't high morale. It wasn't even the victorious crossing of the Jordan. It was when the people of Israel self-identified as the people of God that God said, now we're ready to move. And the Egyptians will have nothing more to say because it will be seen that you are my people. And it's at that point that we pick up the story again and they say, it's time for the Passover. Now, what's significant about this? Numbers tells us that if you're to take the Passover, you must be circumcised. Okay? Now remember, nobody's been circumcised in the wilderness, or virtually nobody. So if nobody's circumcised, you start off in the Exodus with this huge group of circumcised people that can take the Passover. What happens as time goes on? The people in the old way that were circumcised keep dying, and the group gets smaller and smaller because uncircumcised people can't take the Passover. In the meantime, the people ineligible for the Passover start off very small because almost everyone is circumcised, and it grows exponentially like this as the population increases. And in all probability, the Passover has ceased to be celebrated. Or if it has been celebrated, it's been celebrated in an unworthy manner. And so suddenly, you have this group of people and their first response after identifying with God is to say, we've got to celebrate the Passover. It's an incredible moment in time when we find this second command of God, this second ordinance, if you will, that refocuses their vision. How does it do that? Because all of their 40 years of growing up, all of their childhood and teenage and early adult years, all of those years they've been focused on what? What are you going to do today? Well, I'm going to collect manna. Well, why don't we take the day off? No, because if we take the day off, we won't have any food for the day. We can't store it. We can't. Everything was geared toward surviving, toward wilderness living, toward aimless, purposeless living. That's their mentality. God takes it through the Passover and completely jumps over the wilderness years and takes it back to Egypt where God's mighty hand has been seen. And that's what they're celebrating. They're not celebrating even leaving the wilderness. They're celebrating the reality that God moved in a mighty and a dramatic way, that God is powerful to save, and that they are God's people, that just like those early Israelites relied on the blood on the door for salvation, for the passing over of the death angel, so they are relying on God and celebrating that moment. Celebrating circumcision moved them from being aimless wanderers to being the people of God. Celebrating the Passover moved them from the pain of the wilderness back to seeing the mighty hand of God at work. It's a celebration of God. It's a preparation by God of the Israelites to say, here we are, here we go, let's move ahead. Let's look to the future, not be bound by the past. Let's recognize God's victories in the past, but let's not be bound by the slavery of wilderness wandering. They were slaves in Egypt, but actually they were slaves of themselves in the wilderness because they lived by their vision. or by their sight. They lived by the circumstances around them. There was nothing else they could do. But suddenly, once again, they are people of vision. The New Testament talks about this in a marvelous way. Those of you who are part of our Wednesday gatherings will recognize this verse. Because the New Testament talks about it in a wonderful way. Here's how it sets up in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Paul says, we hold the truth in jars of clay. Paul is just saying, when I was younger, I thought I was going to conquer the world. But you know what? You start realizing your own frailty when you're beat up in prison, when you're chained in stocks, when people are throwing rocks at you, when you're getting sick. You start feeling your own weakness. He says, we hold these things in jars of clay. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, he says, therefore, we do not lose heart. With all of the wilderness things that could attack me, we don't lose heart, though outwardly we're wasting away. Wilderness circumstances, some of you feel like that. I know the wasting away thing. I'm wasting away in age. I'm wasting away in emotion. I'm wasting away in resources. I just feel like I'm being wrung out like a rag. Even though we are wasting away outwardly, the circumstances are destroying us. Inwardly, listen, we are being renewed day by day. For light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs all of those trials and troubles. And here it comes. So we fix our eyes on what is seen, not on what is unseen. That's sight versus vision. Got it? Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Paul circumstantially was living in the wilderness, but spiritually was living in the promised land. That's the key. That's the secret. That's what it's all about. Because you can be circumstantially in the wilderness and be living in great victory. Or sometimes we can be circumstantially in the promised land where things have never been better, and we're still in the wilderness. Because the wilderness is a state of mind. It's a state of heart. It's living by circumstance instead of by faith, being governed by our fears and not by our faith. That's what it's all about. Oh, and one final thing. After all of this happens, after they celebrate the Passover, it says on the day after the Passover, and then it says that very day, they are equipped. They are identified. They are remembering God's mighty hand and promises. On that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land. Roasted grain and unleavened bread. And then it says, the manna stopped on the day after they ate this food. You know why? Because they didn't need that anymore. God said, you're going to put down roots. You're going to live with purpose. You're going to eat of the promise. God provided the manna in the desert, and God provided the quail, and you know, that was wonderful. It was wonderful. God enabled them to survive, but only to survive. Because the wilderness was never the place of blessing. The wilderness was never the point of the abundant life. They were the people of God, kind of. They just never took it seriously. They were just surviving. They weren't thriving. And God says, you don't need the man anymore, guys. Because you're eating from the promise. You're eating from the blessing. You're living the abundant life. And this is under the circumstances when the same Canaanites dwell in the land, the same giants dwell in the land. Nothing has changed except their vision. And that's what life is all about. Life is not nearly so much what it gives to you, it's how you see it. Do you see it through the lens of God's eyes and God's future? Or do you see yourself just as a victim of your circumstance? That's the question. And the beauty of what God chooses, two symbols, the circumcision and the Passover. Interestingly enough, one of those symbols is a once-for-all identification. It's a moment in time when you say, I belong to God and He belongs to me. Sounds very much like baptism. It's not the same thing. We shouldn't confuse it, but it sounds very much like baptism. And God wanted to say to those Israelites, take a stand. Take a stand. And there's another ordinance, if you will, Old Testament ordinance, that was the Passover, that remembers the God of salvation and reminds them. And let me make a point. When God did circumcision and Passover, when God does baptism and communion, though they're not the same thing, they're not for God. When Jesus says, do this in remembrance of me, does anybody really think that Jesus is up in heaven saying, oh, I hope they remember me, because if they don't, it's just going to hurt my self-image. I'm going to really be sad if they don't remember. No, he doesn't do that for him. He does it for us. Baptism is for us because it takes that stand and says, I belong to Jesus and he belongs to me. That's why we do it. And that's why we celebrate the communion. It's not about the elements themselves. There's nothing magical or mystical in them. It's about what flows underneath it. It's about what stands behind it. So that's why we celebrate this today. If you haven't been baptized, I'm telling you, you ought to be baptized, because if you're a believer and you haven't been baptized, you're kind of like the uncircumcised Israelite. Nothing magical about baptism. It doesn't save you, doesn't make you holy. But it does say, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ and I want people to know it. And I self-identify with Jesus, because he is identified with me. And when we take the communion, there's nothing magical or mystical. You won't become more holy by taking it. Don't make that mistake. But it's that confirmation in your heart. Because I want to tell you, it's too easy for us to move back to the wilderness. So I'm going to ask those who are going to help us with the communion if you'd come forward at this time. And let's remember Jesus. Let's remember that mighty act, that mighty powerful act whereby he saved us. Not because we deserve it, but because of who he is. Lord, thank you for this opportunity to take the communion, for us to remember Christ. Lord, we thank you that remembering Christ doesn't do anything for him, but it changes us. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.